We're joined by the general manager of the local hockey heroes, Brad Treliving of the Calgary Flames. How are you, sir?
Doing good, Rob. How are you?
I'm all right. We were just talking about this. Are you going to get to benefit from a long weekend?
Well, we're going to head up to Edmonton for the start of the under-18.
The answer then is no.
So there's no weekends in this business. You know that. Every day is Monday. We saw the under-18s here this past week, and then haven't had a chance to get up to Kamloops with some of the stuff we've been dealing with here. And mm-hmm. I know we got a big contingent of our guys are there, and then I'll be up in Edmonton for the 18s starting in the first part of the week.
Okay, well, I'll skip around a little bit on you. I want to take care of the business of the day, get that out of the way, and then talk about some of these things. The decision to buy out a player is never one that is taken lightly. It is not an easy decision. Can you walk us through how we ended up today with Troy Brower being bought out?
Sure, and I think you hit the nail right on the head. These are not easy decisions by any stretch. We thank Troy, and I think first off, you know, Troy came here a couple of years ago. We made an investment with him, and you know, for different reasons, it just didn't work out. It didn't fit, not from a lack of want by both the player and ourselves. And then when we look at, you know, some of the things that we've done over the course of this summer and sort of where we sit, you know, right now with our roster and people that we do have and other people that we think are coming, this is a decision that we made, and they're not easy. I obviously we're very fortunate to have the ownership that we do have to allow us to do something like this. And then with the player, this was a business decision. And as you and I have talked many times, Rob, the hard part about business decisions, you have to make them, but they involve people and good people. And Troy is he's a good man. He's a good pro. I've had a chance to talk with him, you know, over the last couple of days about it. And like I said, it's unfortunate that we got to this point, but it's a decision we felt we had to make and had to make, and we did it, and we move on.
Brad, just if you could, why this window as opposed to the window that was available to you after the Stanley Cup final?
Well, there's just the landscape has changed a little bit here with us.
Yeah.
You look at the initial buyout window that starts right after the Stanley Cup final. And is open for a week there. Our team and our picture, if you will, has changed at that point. And these decisions are ones that you go in, you know, you go into your summer, you go into your off season with a plan of certain things that could happen, and sometimes they don't happen. You know, you look at trying to address certain things in your roster, or look at specific deals, or bringing in specific people, and not all the time that they do happen. So, you know, at that particular time, it was, you know, we sort of had a charted out a course depending on how things went or other moves or other changes that we made. And doing what we've done with Troy is not something you ever, you know, want to do, you know, at the end of the day. And so if there's other ways to, tackle an issue, you try to explore all the avenues prior to that. So, as we sit here today in first part of August, our roster is a little bit different than it was middle of June. And you know, that probably addresses the decision that we made here recently.
Just a couple more on this, and we'll move on to a different topic. One, the reason behind this decision, did it have more to do with cap management or more to do with opportunity and roster size and, as we head towards a camp?
Yeah, probably all of the above, Rob.
Okay.
You're constantly managing, you know, your the financial picture, and we knew that, like I said, there were some certain things that on our to-do list that we wanted to try to accomplish going into the summer, and we were able to do those things, and so our cap situation changes a little bit, and then we look at the specific role. You know, Troy and I talked a lot. At the end of the year, you know, about his situation. And like I said, you know, this is a professional guy that he wants to do more and wanted to accomplish more here. And we talked a little bit about role and those types of things. And if we, you know, if we saw him, or if things played out where he, you know, was probably going to play at a lower level role here right now, that, you know, that's certainly not something that he, you know, he's a pro. He'd do anything that he's asked to do, but obviously he wants to contribute as much as he can. From our standpoint, just from a financial picture, as we talked about, if, you know, at the salary he was at, if he was going to be playing in a lower line level and in a reduced role, if you will, that probably doesn't fit in terms of the financial picture. So, you know, at the end of the day, when you go through a situation like this, you know, you have to be accountable. And that starts with myself. And, you know, we brought Troy in here 2 years ago. It was a decision as a staff that we spent a lot of time on. It didn't work out. And not from a lack of try from everybody, but at the end of the day, you're accountable that, you know, we felt that we had to make a change and move forward with this.
Brad, the last one, and this is a little ticklish, and I'll ask it this way, because I spend every day pretending to be a general manager, and I make no mistakes. You, this is what you do for a living. How does a decision like this impact you moving forward? Does this make you a little gun-shy the next time you're thinking about a free agent? Is this something that you'll do an internal review when, why didn't this work? I'm just curious about a decision like this and how it impacts you personally moving forward.
Well, personally, at the end of the day, as I say all the time here, when the decision, you have a staff that you consult with and we have real good people, but when the decision is made, ultimately, the person in charge, who is me, is responsible. And when you get to a point where you've had to buy out a player, like I said, there's all sorts of factors, but you never go in signing a player with the idea that you're going to be buying him out. So somewhere along the line, the buck stops here. And so you're always reviewing. You learn as, you know, I believe in any walk of life, you're only wrong if you don't learn from the experiences that you take. And so you learn of why it didn't work. What were the reasons why? And you can't repeat those decisions. So certainly, to your question, Rob, I take full responsibility. You take it personally that, you know, you want to do the best possible job you can for the organization. You want decisions to work out. You take a lot of time in going through and finding the best fit and the best people to be part of the organization. And when it doesn't, work, you take it personally. And like I said, these are not conversations that you want to have with players on a regular basis. These are not actions that you want to take on a regular basis. But you also have to be very, you know, true to the organization and true to trying to build your team, that if you feel that there's a way to be better and correct something that's not working, you have to step forward and be accountable for it. So certainly every decision you make is scrutinized. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you can do this job being gun shy. You have to, I've said it many times before, you can't be reckless, but I fully believe you have to stand in and take swings. This job is walking that tight rope, and there's no net. And it's not for the faint of heart. And not every decision you're going to make is going to turn out. But the minute you get to the point of saying, well, I'm going to be paralyzed and I'm not going to do it, then you probably should be doing something else. So you can't be reckless. You got to work through things. But to me, you got to get back in the batter's box, dig in, and take your next swing.
No, I appreciate the answer. Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames, our guest, joining us down the guest hotline courtesy of Grey Eagle Resort and Casino. Your observation on this offseason. First, I want to ask you about arbitration, because, you know, last year I think there was only one case that went in front of an arbiter last year. Mm-hmm. Everybody settled before. There's been more this year. There's more cases that went. Is there a trend? Is there anything that you've seen from, you know, your, you know, the ARB cases that you've avoided and the one you went through and the ones that you're seeing around the league? Are there any trends this summer?
Well, I think you're seeing it, you know, I think for years and years and years, arbitration has had this negative stigma attached to it. And, you know, it's, I'd start by saying it's not the easiest process to go through. It's time consuming. I think everybody be, when I say everybody, the player side and the team side would be rather doing other things than going through arbitration in late July, early August. But I think it's a couple things. It's obviously a function of our CBA. It's part of the business. And I think you're seeing now is with every year that goes on, and you know the financial picture of the league changes in the sense that, you know, with every year now you're seeing those younger players, you know, people are holding on to their players. You're seeing young players sign big contracts of big money. Those top players, you know, earlier than ever before. And so you're really having to allocate and manage your resources accordingly. So although you've got an $80 million cap or approaching an $80 million cap, every dollar is important, and every dollar is important to the player. And, you know, for us, you know, going through the arbitration process, again, it's a right that the players have. So I always say, number one, that's something that they choose. It's not us choosing it, but we don't begrudge them. You know, that's their CBA right. We understand the process. We understand the collective bargaining agreement and how it works. But it also is a function of, we're not trying to be picking on one guy or two guys that have arbitration, but we've got X amount of dollars to feed everyone. And, you know, the extra dollar that we may spend in a certain area may prevent us from spending it somewhere else. So it's trying to fit everybody under the same roof and take care of business as best you can. But I think you're seeing that. And I think it's going to continue, Rob. I think, you know, everything is a little bit cyclical in terms of when contracts are up and what players' contracts are up. But I think you're going to see more and more, maybe in previous years, if you look back in the last 5 years, that there was, you know, not as many cases that went to arbitration. I think two things go hand in hand. I think you're going to see more, and I think it's good for the public to understand. I think you're going to see more of these arbitration cases maybe go through with the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just the fact that, you know, you're trying to manage your payroll accordingly. And I think the other thing you're going to see, and it's creeped in the last couple of years, but you're going to see maybe players that fans initially might say, oh, geez, I thought he was a pretty good player, not get qualified. You know, we went through this a couple of years ago with Joel Colbert.
Yep.
You know, you look at a couple of the cases that have, you know, either gone to a hearing or gone real close to a hearing and settling just before. It's not just that guy who's making $4 or $5 million, but it might be that guy who, you know, you're looking to see, okay, you need as many guys. If you've got $4, $5, $6, $7, $8 million players, you need other players that are playing at league minimums. And so those players that may fit on your roster in a particular slot, whether it be lower line, maybe be a third pair defenseman, seventh defenseman, you know, from just a, and I'm leaving the names out of it, but just from, you know, you look at the open boxes on your team. If you got guys at the top end, you're going to have guys at the bottom end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just math. And so what you're seeing now, and I think you're going to see more of it, those players that say, hey, listen, had a pretty good year. We like the player. But if we qualify him, you know, we need him in a box for X. We need that salary to be X. Nothing personal with player, but if we qualify him, he's got a case, an arbitration case is going to pay him Y. We may not qualify him. See if we can get something worked out before or after, but we can't take the chance of now going in an arbitrating room or just getting a deal done because he's got arbitration rights that's going to exceed what our box can pay. Hopefully that makes sense, but I think you're going to see more of that. I think you're going to see maybe players that you know, people may wonder, well, why don't they qualify? I mean, I use the example of Joe Colburn. Joe had a real good year for us.
Sure did.
You know, 2 or 3 years ago, I guess it was. I think he had 19 goals. We liked Joe. Talked to Joe beforehand. Couldn't get to a deal, but we knew if we qualified Joe, just from how the arbitration process works, these decisions are where you go into an arbitrator's room. You have a pretty good sense going in what that decision is going to be, give or take. So you look at these cases long before, you know, we're looking at these cases as the season's going on and once the season ends. So you have a pretty good idea what the number could be. And, you know, when you feel that it could exceed what fits within your salary structure, you know, in Joe's case, didn't mean we didn't like the player, didn't like the person, but we felt if we qualified him, he's got a heck of an arbitration case. The number's going to come back at more than we can, you know, fit into to our salary structure. And I think you're going to see more of that. It does happen now. Like there's players now that you see sign contracts that right around that qualifying period that, you know, are negotiated. And in some cases said, listen, we're going to have to get something done here or we're not going to be able to qualify you. So I think that's another, it's probably a long-winded answer talking about arbitration, but I think the two of them fit hand in hand.
No, I really appreciate the answer because I think, take baseball, for instance. We had this radical off-season in baseball where free agents weren't getting signed, and there's been a seismic shift in the way off-season has changed there. I wouldn't call this a seismic shift, but it did feel from the outside that this summer was a little bit different, and I just wanted to ask and see if this was going to set things up into motion down the road, and it looks like it's going to.
Yeah, I think you're just going to see, again, as the salaries – at the top end continue to, you know, you got to find ways to make sure you've got room and space and, you know, we're seeing it more and more, you know, those top young players coming out of their entry level contract and it's, you know, it sort of segues into a different debate of, okay, you've got a good player coming out of his entry level contract. You know, is bridging a player the right way to go? Is signing that player long-term the right way to go? They each of them have different salary implications, cap implications, short and long term. So, you know, it's just we're seeing those young players, those top young players, when they come out of entry level, getting bigger dollars earlier. You got to find a way to make it up. And, you know, like I said, you treat everybody fairly, but you can't treat everybody equally because then they'd all make the same money, and that doesn't work. So, but I think you're going to see that. I think you'll see as I know even for us the last number of years, you have a lot of debate going into those qualifying periods. And it's not because you don't like the player or like the person or see that he's progressing, but you've got to, like I said, you've only got X amount to go around and you've got to feed everyone.
A couple more for you really quick, because I know that whenever you get to do this show, you're hoping that I'm going to ask you about the work you're doing right now and give you that opportunity to negotiate in public. Are you close with Hanifin and Shinkarik? I believe those are the only two contracts you have outstanding.
Yeah, those are the last. Well, I don't want to let you down, so I won't get into too much detail about it. You know, obviously, in Noah's case, you know, first of all, we're not expecting we have any issues there. It's just it's a matter of getting a contract that both sides are comfortable with. And I've been in regular contact, constant contact with Noah's representative. I've been in contact actually with Noah as well, and just. It was an interesting little while for us and both are aware that, you know, as we went through the arbitration season, you've got deadlines in those situations where, you know, you've got hearings coming up and we sort of were going through each file, as they came. So there was just, you know, there's only so many hours in the day there, but, this young guy is a real priority for us. Like I said, we've had great conversation, great communication. And we're hopeful that we'll get something done here sooner rather than later. We got nothing to announce today, but we certainly are real positive with the direction the talks are going. And At some point here soon, we'll get something knocked out because we think this guy's going to be a real good player for us for a long time.
So you get to spend a long weekend in Edmonton. They have a big mall and a water park, but I know you're going to be watching hockey. This is an interesting tournament because this is the non-sanctioned one of the two under-18s, and the other one doesn't tend to get this caliber of player. How important is it to have a tournament like this in your backyard heading into the 2019 draft?
Well, first of all, to be able to see, I mean, for years and years now, I don't know how many years, but we'd be all going over to Bratislava for this tournament. And to have it here, I think, is great. I think it's great not only for just the hockey community that you don't have to travel all over to Europe, but so I think, you know, if you pulled the scouts, they're all excited that they can stay in North America and stay closer to home. But I think it's great for, you know, the hockey fan that has a chance to see a lot of these young players that really, this group of players is a large majority of the guys that will be, you know, you'll be hearing their names come next June at the draft. So it's a great tournament. From the hockey side, you know, we always like to call this a bit of an identifier. I think you also have to, be cognizant of the calendar and the time of year. And there's always that yin and the yang that I always scratch my head that we're in rinks in July. And a lot of these kids, it's, you know, the amount of hockey that they're playing, especially that what we do to these kids in their draft year is it's sort of like a 12-month goal for them. And, you know, they've been training, finish the year, they train, get ready for their certain camps, get ready for this camp. They'll have a small break, and a lot of them, I think, the Quebec camp start, you know, in the next week or two.
Of course they do.
And so you got to keep that in mind that it's summer hockey. So from a purely draft perspective and a scouting and evaluation perspective, this is an identifier for us. You know, our scouts have been watching these guys for a couple of years. They know the players. You got to, you know, now a lot of these kids that are entering their draft year, you're just getting a base of where they are in the summer going into their draft year. So you got to be very careful of getting too excited or too down on guys going into this tournament. There's going to be guys that have great tournaments and maybe don't have great years, and vice versa, that maybe doesn't have a great showing in August, but you know, what he does in the winter over the course of the next 7, 8, 9 months is really going to carry water in terms of where you see him in the draft. But being able to assemble all these young guys at this age group, you know, locally here, if you will, in our province, I think is it'll be fun. It's a great tournament. There's great talent, and I think people should come out and support it.
As always, my friend, appreciate this. We joke about it that there's no off season, but really here we are at the beginning of August now having these kind of conversations, and likely one more once you get the players under contract. It's just nuts now. Brad, appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, Rob.
Brad, you too. Brad Trueliving, and he deserves it because he's going to Edmonton for the long weekend. Joins us down the Grey Eagle Resort and Casino guest hotline.